Chapter 11. Fearing they would find food less available once they reached higher elevations, Jack and Will decided to set up camp just after lunch. They would spend the day hunting wild game in the hopes of finding and killing a significant source of protein. Jack had devised a method to dry meat in the Setian sun. It would enable them to carry and consume the meat for at least a week at a time, making their journey across the mountains less problematic. Jack moved quietly through the forest, attempting to move closer to his target. About 40 meters away, down a long, narrow valley, was a long, fat, reddish-colored animal that resembled images of wild boars back on Earth. Based on strategies Jack had found in the survival guide, Will circled around the hill to the far end of the valley and had taken up a position just out of the creature's line of sight. Jack froze as the boar suddenly looked up, its concern piqued by the sound of Jack's footsteps. Jack decided the animal did not have good distance vision, since it looked directly toward him, yet didn't appear to see him. Will, on the other hand, was certain the animal had spotted Jack, and he jumped out from his hiding place, whooping and hollering as he ran toward the animal. The boar-like creature, shocked by the sight of this unusual and apparently psychotic creature dancing in the distance, turned and ran in the opposite direction, directly toward Jack. The creature lumbered along at a remarkable speed for an animal with such short, stubby legs. Jack raised his pistol as the boar approached him at an all-out run. Taking careful aim, he waited for the animal to get closer before firing. When the time was right, Jack gently depressed the trigger of his pistol, firing a single shot directly at the forehead of the charging beast. To his disbelief, the round bounced off the animal's surprisingly hard skull, leaving nothing more than a small patch of torn, bleeding fur where it struck. The bullet failed to even knock it off its stride. Jack suddenly realized there was nothing wrong with the animal's distance vision. The creature simply wasn't afraid of him. Jack fired again, this time without such careful aim. The round kicked up dirt as it struck the ground to the left of the onrushing boar, missing the animal completely. With no time left, Jack scurried up a nearby rock to escape the angry animal as it circled the rock, looking for a way to climb its sides and seek retribution for the unwarranted attack. The boar-like creature snorted and growled as it paced angrily about the base of the rock, rearing up on its hind legs more than once to reveal its long, sharp fangs in a ferocious display. It worked at first, and Jack realized he wanted nothing to do with this creature. But without an escape route, he was left with little choice. He fired round after round, some bouncing off the creature's tough hide, others entering its body through areas of less resistance. Still, the creature refused to die. The beast, now full of rage, reared up again, putting its front hooves on the rock as if trying to jump up in a single bound. Jack aimed for the animal's open mouth, fired 3 rounds in rapid succession, all of which struck the boar directly into its snarling red maw. Blood and tissue flew out of the creature's mouth as its eyes filled with blood. The animal let out a painful squeal, then fell over onto its side, dark reddish-brown blood oozing from its wounds. Seconds later, its breathing stopped, and it lay motionless next to the rock. After watching it for more than a minute, Jack decided the creature was dead and jumped down from his perch. He gave it a tap with his boot, the boar's lifeless body quivering from the blow. It was an ugly thing, with ragged fur and beady black eyes. It smelled horrible as well, and Jack wondered if it would even taste good. Will walked up to him a minute later, stopping next to the creature and looking down.
"Too bad we had to kill it," he commented, as he stared at the dead animal.
Jack raised his eyes to Will, dumbfounded.
"That was the plan, remember?"
"Are you sure it's even edible?"
Will wondered, noticing the creature's pungent aroma.
"After all that, it better be."
"That should do it,"
Tony announced, as he finished securing the last deck plate to the raft. Frank walked around the makeshift raft, pushing and pulling at various points to test its sturdiness.
"I think we should put some sort of a skirt around the nose and under the first deck plate, just to help the water flow around the nose and under the deck."
"That shouldn't be too hard. It might reduce the drag on the nose a bit, too,"
Tony replied.
How long do you think it'll take to install the propulsion system?
I don't know, a few hours maybe?
Frank looked up at the sun. It was already sitting fairly low in the sky.
I don't know. There are only 4 hours of daylight left, and we still have to rig up a way to tow it to the water.
How are you planning on doing that? Tony wondered.
Frank lifted one end of the raft. It's not too heavy. I thought I would lash a couple of canopy poles together and make a long triangle with a couple wheels on the back end, then lash it to the back of an ATC.
Like a trailer.
That should work, Tony agreed.
We'll get started on the trailer while you and Adia work on the propulsion system.
Mac?
Frank's voice squawked over the comms.
Go ahead, Frank.
How you holding up?
Oh, pretty fair, I'd say.
Think you can last until morning?
No problem, Mac assured him. What's the holdup?
Well, the raft is finished, but Tony still needs to install the propulsion, and I have to make a trailer to tow it to the water.
I was thinking about that earlier, Mac replied. You could use the wheels from the cargo pod tow kit and some of those long poles from one of the portable canopies.
That's what I was thinking. The whole thing would have gone a lot faster if you were here to help build it. We should finish it up sometime tonight and have it in the water in the morning.
Copy that. Just bring some breakfast, will you? We're running low on rations here.
You got it. Hang in there.
We will,
Mac promised, as he turned his mic off. What's the news? Sarah asked.
They'll be here first thing in the morning, Mac promised her.
Great, she commented, unenthusiastically. Another night stuck out here in the middle of nowhere.
She was depressed, Mac could tell. He looked at his watch.
It'll be dark in a few hours. I'm going to go for a walk, explore our little valley.
He rose to his feet.
Care to join me?
No, thanks, Sarah declined. I'm going to stay here and rest a bit, she said, as she rubbed her sore side. My ribs are still bothering me.
Suit yourself. I'll be back in a few hours.
Mac turned and began to walk toward the woods.
Wait a minute, Sarah called after him, suddenly panicked. You're just going to leave me out here? What if I need your help?
Mac was a little surprised. Not only was she admitting that she might need his help, but she seemed genuinely frightened at the thought of being left alone here. Something was different. She was no longer the same Sarah he had known only a day ago.
There's a signal flare in my pack. Just point it toward the sky and push the button on the bottom. I can be back in minutes if I have to, he assured her, as he continued to walk away.
Sarah sat there, watching him until he disappeared into the distant tree line. She scanned the area in all directions. It was quiet and peaceful here. The soft, warm breeze blew across the meadow, fluttering the tall grass in graceful waves. The topaz sky above was littered with puffy white and gray clouds that moved slowly from east to west, casting lumbering shadows across her as they passed under the afternoon setting sun. She could hear the sounds of birds in the distance, one of them occasionally soaring overhead in a high, drifting flight. The grass made a subtle brushing sound as it danced in the breeze. The whole scene was utterly surreal to her. Even though she had spent most of her life working with plants and soils, it had all been in labs and ag bays on board the Daedalus, large climate-controlled compartments stacked from floor to ceiling with growing flats, sun lamps, and irrigation systems. It had seemed enough of a miracle to her that something could grow from a mere seed into a fully mature plant with nothing more than a little light, water, soil, and carbon dioxide. But that had been in a carefully controlled and closely monitored environment. Here, under the open sky, it occurred naturally. There were no sun lamps, no growing flats, no irrigation systems, no computers to monitor the status of the crops, no one to till the soil or plant the seeds, no one to harvest the crops or control the growth rates through genetic manipulations. Sarah lay back on the grass next to the tent, watching the clouds pass overhead. She was in the middle of nature, in its most pristine form. She was surrounded by the miracle of life itself. She felt different somehow, changed. She felt renewed, rejuvenated. She couldn't explain it, but she was sure it had something to do with the life that surrounded her.
"Wow!" Jack exclaimed as he chewed his first bite. "That's not bad."
"Thank you."
"How did you get rid of the stench?"
"I didn't," Will admitted. "I used those pungent purple leaves to season it. Basically, I replaced one smell with another."
"Well, whatever you did, it worked. This stuff is great. You're going to have to write a cookbook when we get back."
"Oh, yes. William Scheller's Wilderness Recipes."
It was an amusing thought. "There's another reason for your name to go down in the history books."
Will took another bite of the boar meat. "One of these days, I'm going to try my hand at making a salad. I haven't had a good salad since we left home."
"Good idea," Jack agreed, as he shoveled down his dinner. "Why don't you get started tomorrow? I could really go for a good salad myself. Besides, I think we could use another day of preparation before we head up into the mountains. Maybe even 2 or 3 days, for that matter."
Will was a little shocked by that. Jack had always been so dead set on trudging ahead, trying to get to the landing site as quickly as possible.
"Why do you say that?" "Well, I was thinking, winter can't be too far off. What, maybe 1 or 2 months?"
"Something like that, I would guess."
"It's bound to get colder as we move into higher altitudes. And to be honest, I have no idea how long it will take us to cross this mountain range. If we're lucky, we'll find an easy route through to the other side."
Jack finished his last bite, setting his small metal plate into the pot of hot water they used for cleaning up after dinner.
"Then again, we may not be so lucky. So, I was thinking, maybe we'd be better served to stay here a few days and prepare. I've been reading the survival guide," he continued. "I think we need to do some more hunting, gather some extra meat to make into jerky. We could collect more roots, nuts, and berries as well. Also, we need to be thinking about protecting ourselves from the elements. These clothes aren't going to cut it once winter sets in, especially at higher elevations."
"What do we do? How do we protect ourselves?"
"Furs," Jack smiled. "We hunt some larger animals, something with heavy fur. We skin it and make some heavy winter coats to keep us warm."
"We can do that?" Will asked.
"Why not? All the instructions are in the survival guide."
It made sense. That much Will had to admit. He just had a hard time imagining himself wearing animal fur as clothing.
"Are you sure that's a good idea, Jack?"
Will remembered Jack's difficulty killing the boar. "I mean, it took the whole clip to kill this thing."
"Yeah, well, next time, I won't use a pistol."
Jack gestured toward the rifle, leaning against a nearby tree.
"Coats, huh?"
Will contemplated.
"Oh, yeah. We can even make boot covers, mittens, headgear, you name it. We've got a sewing kit and lots of high tensile strength fishing line. We should be able to make anything we want."
"I didn't know you were such an accomplished seamstress," Will teased.
"I'm not, of course, but the survival guide has all the instructions. Cutting patterns, stitching patterns, skinning and tanning instructions, you name it."
"So, we're going to become real mountain men," Will chuckled, remembering the references in the history files he had studied as a young lad.
"You got it. Oh, by the way, we'll have to stop shaving."
"Really?" Will asked. No Dedalian had ever worn facial hair. It was considered unhygienic.
"Why is that?" "Beards will help keep our faces warm during cold weather."
Will stroked his chin in contemplation.
"I wonder how I'll look in a beard. Distinguished, maybe?"
"Undoubtedly," Jack laughed. Mac returned just before sundown, triumphantly carrying the carcass of a small dead animal.
"Where have you been?" Sarah asked. "I was beginning to get worried."
"I was hunting for dinner," Mac announced,
holding up his kill for display.
"You killed that thing?"
she said, skeptically.
"Yep,"
Mac grinned, holding it up proudly.
"You're not planning to eat that thing, are you?"
"You bet I am."
"Are you crazy? How do you know it won't kill you?"
"I don't, but I do plan on finding out."
"You can't just eat it. You have to test it first, determine its toxicity, its effects on the human body."
"Oh, that could take hours," Mac objected.
Exactly. But I'm hungry now, and we don't have a test kit.
So, you're just going to eat some strange alien animal?
Oh, come on, Sarah, it's just a rabbit.
It may look like a rabbit, Mac, but it's definitely not a rabbit. It is an alien creature. Do you understand what I'm telling you?
I'm not stupid, Sarah.
Then don't act stupid, Mac.
Look, Mac explained, as he dropped the dead animal by the fire pit. The way I see it, everything else here appears to have developed in pretty much the same way as it did on Earth, right?
Yes, but...
And Laura said the DNA structure is basically the same.
So far, but...
So, it stands to reason that this little critter, who also probably developed the same way, has a better-than-average chance of being safe to eat.
Mac? She urged. Not every creature on Earth was safe to eat. Many organisms were extremely toxic to humans.
Bugs and spiders, sure. But my great-great-grandpappy, who lived on Earth, once said, every animal on God's green earth was edible. Some of them just didn't taste very good. So the way I figure it, if it looks like a rabbit and acts like a rabbit, then it probably tastes like a rabbit as well. And guess what? He added, as he pointed at the Setian rabbit on the ground. That thing was hopping when I shot it, so it's a rabbit. She couldn't believe what she was hearing.
That's your argument? She asked. It was hopping? She continued, mocking him.
She reached over and picked up the dead animal, turning to march off to dispose of it for his own good. What the hell you think you're doing?
Someone around here has got to make sense, she declared. I'm tossing this thing into the floodwaters.
The hell you are, he objected, rising to give chase.
Oh, yes, I am, she insisted, as she headed toward the water.
Mac tried to grab Sarah as she broke into a run. She only managed a few steps before her ribs began to hurt, causing her to stop, grasping at her injured side. Give me the damn rabbit, Sarah.
It's not a rabbit, she refused,
holding the dead animal behind her back. Mac tried several times to reach behind her, being careful not to bump her tender ribs. Don't make me get tough with you, he threatened.
Ha!
She laughed mockingly as she played keep away with the carcass.
I'm so scared.
That was enough. Mac grabbed her right shoulder, spinning her around with ease.
Ow!
She screamed as his hand squeezed her shoulder and spun her around abruptly.
Let go of me, you jerk!
She commanded, resisting his hold on her. Give it to me, Mac ordered with determination.
Fine,
she agreed, after seeing the anger in his eyes.
Go ahead and eat the damn thing.
Mac snatched the carcass from her hand, letting go of her shoulder and heading back to the fire.
But don't expect me to take care of you when you get sick and die,
Sarah yelled after him. Gee, Sarah, have you lost your mind? He demanded, as he dropped the carcass and returned to building the fire. Sarah rubbed her shoulder where Mac had grabbed her.
I'm only trying to save you from your own stupidity.
Why is it that you women always think you know what's best for us?
Because you men are always pulling stupid stunts like this, she retorted,
as she followed him back. Mac stopped, turning around to face her again. Have you found anything even remotely threatening about the plants here?
No, but...
And what about the dirt? He interrupted. Is it so terribly different that earth plants won't grow in it?
Well, no, but...
Have you found anything that would lead you to believe the organisms here would be unsafe to eat?
No,
she admitted reluctantly. Then why are you so sure that I'm gonna die if I eat this thing?
I'm not sure, Mac, she confessed. That's my point.
Do you think we can thrive here if we can't eat the indigenous organisms? What are we going to do? Grow earth crops in earth soil inside big domes or something? Keep raising earth rabbits inside the domes as well? Does that sound like a good plan to you? That's what we've been doing all the way here, four generations of us, and we're barely surviving, let alone thriving.
Mac,
that is my point, Sarah, Mac continued. You can test things for years, but sooner or later, someone's going to have to eat the stuff to be sure. It might as well be someone who's hungry. Someone who has as much to gain as he does to lose. Mac tossed another log on the burning fire.
Well, that time is now, and that someone is me.
Sarah looked at him for a moment. His logic made some sense, despite her best arguments. But, Mac, wouldn't it be safer to wait until more tests have been done? Or at least wait until we're back at the LRV, where Maria could take care of you if you got sick?
Yes, but what if they can't get to us tomorrow?
Mac pointed out as he sat down by the fire, pulled out his knife, and started trimming a large stick.
What if we're stranded out here for several days, or even weeks?
He looked her straight in the eyes.
We won't have much choice then, will we?
Suddenly, she realized what he was doing. He wasn't just hungry. He wasn't just trying to feed himself. In his own stupid way, he was trying to protect her, in case they did have to stay there for a few weeks.
They're coming to get us tomorrow, Mac. You said so yourself.
If their plan works, sure. But in case you've forgotten, none of us has had much luck in the water since we arrived here.
Sarah was speechless. She watched as Mac began to cut apart a few branches. Sitting down a meter away from him, she watched as he trimmed two large branches into small Y-shaped pieces and stuck them into the ground on either side of the fire pit.
What are you doing? She asked.
Making a cooking spit, he answered quietly.
Oh.
She watched as he selected a straight branch long enough to reach across the fire, scraping the thin bark off of it with his large knife.
Where did you get that knife? She asked. I've never seen anything like it before.
My father gave it to me.
Really?
She continued to observe him cleaning the stick. The knife was 30 centimeters long, with a wide silver blade that was polished to perfection. Its cutting edge appeared razor sharp, and its opposite edge was lined with a long row of saw teeth that looked like they could cut through just about anything. It was a formidable-looking weapon that looked natural in Mac's hands.
"Where did he get it?" she asked politely.
"His great-great-grandfather brought it with him when he left Earth. It was the only thing he brought with him."
"Why a knife?"
"He was a simple man, or so I'm told. A carpenter. He liked to hunt and fish, mostly. Anything he could do to get him outside."
"Hardly seems the type to agree to be locked up inside a spaceship for the rest of his life."
"Yeah, well, I guess he fell in love with the wrong woman. A doctor. The daughter of one of the scientists who worked on the original project back on Earth. They met in Australia. She and her mother and brother were hiding out from the syndicate with the Eden Underground, working on the Hercules Drive. He was working for some developer out there, building tract homes for young Australian families. When it was time for her to go, I guess he couldn't bear the thought of losing her. So he went with her."
"Wow, that's so romantic."
"Shows you what romance gets you," Mac muttered darkly.
"How do you mean?"
"He spent the rest of his life tending to the landscape on the garden deck. Not much of a life for a real outdoorsman."
"So he gave that knife to his son?"
"Who gave it to his son, and so on, until it reached me."
"Are you going to give it to your son?"
"Probably. If I ever have one."
"Oh, I'm sure you will. I can't imagine you without a son to corrupt."
Mac chuckled.
"Every Morrison male since then has been told the same thing when they received it."
"What's that?"
"All a man really needs to survive are his wits and a good knife."
"Kind of a simple philosophy, isn't it?"
"Yeah, well, we Morrisons come from simple stock."
She knew that wasn't really true. Mac probably was only remotely related to the man who originally owned that knife, if at all. Not with all the genetic dilution that had occurred over the decades due to the use of in vitro fertilization instead of natural conception. But he knew that. Many of the Dedalians clung to the idea of family heritage, despite their lack of genetic relation to their predecessors. It seemed to provide them with a sense of family pride that they sorely lacked. Even Sarah preferred to consider herself related to her great-grandmother.
"I don't know, Mac. You don't seem so simple to me."
Mac looked at her again. He knew she was only trying to be nice. She was an intelligent woman, confident, and well-educated, considerably more than him. Those serving in scientific disciplines had far more education than those whose jobs involved more manual labor.
Thanks.
Mac finished peeling the bark off his roasting stick, setting it aside to begin cleaning his kill.
You know, you're a lot like she was.
She who?
Sarah wondered.
Great-great-grandpappy Peter's wife,
Mac explained, holding up the knife.
I'll take that as a compliment.
That's how it was meant, he assured her,
as he cut away the dead creature's hide.
What was her name?
Jennifer. Jennifer Bell.
Matthew Bell's daughter?
Sarah was shocked.
That's her.
Wow! Then it was definitely a compliment.
Sarah thought for a moment.
Then you're related to Jack?
She surmised.
Considerably removed, yes.
I didn't know that.
Sarah watched as he removed the last of the animal's hide, tossing it aside for later.
If I remember my history correctly, she was opposed to a lot of the council's ideas as well,
Sarah teased.
That she was.
Mac jabbed the tip of his knife into the animal's gut, slicing it open down its length, its internal organs spilling out onto the ground.
You definitely have that in common with her.
The sight of the creature's guts gushing out repulsed Sarah, and she looked away.
So that's why you signed up for this mission, to be a builder?
She asked, to take her mind off the bloody display.
Seemed like the thing to do, Mac shrugged. Maybe I thought that it would make old Pete happy. You know, seeing his kin following in his footsteps, building homes on an alien world.
Mac stopped his disemboweling momentarily, looking up at her.
Seems sort of apropos, doesn't it? He mused.
Apropos?
Sarah replied, almost laughing at his unexpected use of the word.
Hey, I know a few words.
Mac looked a little unsure of himself for a moment.
That was the right word, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, Sarah assured him with a smile. And yes, it does.
Mac finished removing the animal's innards, wiping away as much of the blood and undesirable tissue as possible. Grasping the head of the creature firmly in his left hand, he sliced around the circumference of its neck, severing all of the tissue surrounding its cervical spine, before snapping it off cleanly with both hands. She watched as Mac drove the long, bare stick forcibly through the length of the creature's body from head to tail, positioning it in the center of the long stick and placing it gently in the crux of the two upright Y-shaped cradles he had pushed into the ground on either side of the pit earlier. It had been a gruesome display, watching him skin and clean the creature for consumption, but it had somehow been comforting to watch him perform the act without hesitation. If they did end up stranded here for weeks, he would undoubtedly be able to provide for her. An hour later, the sun was down, leaving only the blue and amber light of the twin moons, the angle of their shadows becoming more oblique as Proxima moved farther ahead of Dista on its orbital plane.
"Are you sure you want to do this?"
Sarah asked.
"Please, Sarah,"
Mac objected, as he ripped a leg from the cooked animal's carcass.
"Give it a rest."
Sarah moved her pinched right thumb and forefinger across her mouth as if she were zipping it closed, indicating that he would hear no further objections from her. She watched in fear as he took his first bite, as if he would suddenly drop to an agonizing death right in front of her.
"Mmm,"
he hummed with satisfaction as he chewed the tender meat.
"Oh, this is delicious."
He took another bite, nearly devouring the leg bone in the process.
"Oh, you gotta try this, Sarah,"
he urged, with his mouth full of Setian rabbit meat.
"Oh, it's great."
"I don't know,"
she said, hesitantly, still waiting for him to fall over in pain. She watched as Mac consumed both hind legs and then dug into the torso, moaning praises over the flavor between every bite. Sarah looked at her energy bar and dried fruit. It didn't look very appetizing right now. And with every bite she watched him enjoy, her rations became less appealing. Eventually, the sound of Mac smacking his lips and the intriguing aroma of the meat wore her down. Maybe just a little taste?
Mac smiled, pulling one of the smaller front legs from the body and handing it to Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah looked over the juicy brown leg. Tan meat hung from the small bone, threatening to fall off it at any moment. She sniffed at it for a second, testing its aroma, as if she might be able to smell some unknown toxin. Mac watched with great delight as she sniffed the meat, trying to get up the courage to touch it with her tongue.
Are you going to eat it or just lick it? He laughed.
Just give me a minute, will you?
She snapped. She opened her mouth tentatively, trying to pinch off a tiny piece of meat to test. But the entire portion began to fall off the bone, and she instinctively opened her mouth wider to catch it before it fell to the ground. She moaned, afraid to close her mouth around it, but not wanting to spit it out.
Just chew it, Sarah,
he cackled loudly. She closed her mouth slowly, biting down onto the warm, tender meat. It tasted unusual, not like anything she had ever tasted before. But it was not an unpleasant taste, she noticed, as she began to chew. It was actually quite delicious. Her expression slowly turned from horror to pleasure as she continued to chew the alien meat.
It's good, huh?
Sarah nodded her head in agreement.
Tastes like rabbit, right?
No,
she managed to say as she continued eating. Mac watched as she chewed the meat for an unusually long time.
Are you gonna swallow it?
Sarah swallowed hard, immediately chasing the meat with a gulp of purified creek water.
So?
Mac said, waiting for her response.
You're right, she agreed. It is good.
She took another bite, pulling the rest of the meat from the bone into her mouth and chewing.
I told you so,
Mac bragged. He pulled the other leg off and handed it to her.
Eat up.
Sarah eagerly devoured the last leg, attacking part of the torso after that. The meat was delicious, better than anything she could remember eating in recent months. She didn't know if it was the animal itself or the open fire that Mac had cooked it on, but there was no denying that it was quite enjoyable to eat. Within minutes, they had finished the entire animal, leaving nothing but the skeleton of its torso hanging from the cooking pit.
A lot better than dried fruit and energy bars, huh?
He asked, as he watched Sarah uncharacteristically licking the juice from her fingertips.
Mm-hmm,
she agreed. She licked her fingers clean, savoring every last drop of the flavorful oils. She couldn't believe it could be so satisfying. But now, she wished there was more.
Is that it?
She asked, as she looked at the bear skeleton, picking minuscule bits of meat and gristle from it, and popping them into her mouth.
That's all there is, Mac laughed.
What?
She asked.
Look at you, he chuckled. 10 minutes ago you were expecting me to drop dead. Now you're picking at the bare bones like a starving child.
Oh, shut up,
she protested playfully. Mac laughed even harder.
Why don't you make yourself useful and go out and kill another one?
Mac continued laughing.
Oh, you are such a jerk,
she said, throwing one of the bones at him.
Now what?
We need dessert, he proclaimed.
Of course, she agreed, playing along. I'll call the galley and see if they have any pie.
I'm serious, he insisted.
Come on, what do we have for dessert?
Mac reached into his day pack, opened it up, and pulled out a small resealable plastic bag full of dehydrated apricots.
Hand me that cup over there.
Dried fruit?
She asked, as she handed him the cup.
Haven't you had enough dried fruit for one day?
Ah, but this isn't just any dried fruit,
he announced mysteriously. He poured some water into the cup, then dumped the pieces of dried fruit into the water, pushing them down into the cup, and then adding more water until it was nearly full.
What are you doing?
Sarah asked.
Rehydrating the fruit, he explained,
as he carefully set the cup down out of the way.
What for?
You'll see,
he promised. He tossed another piece of wood onto the fire and stirred up the embers with a stick to help light the new log. She watched him for a moment, curious what he was up to.
How long do we have to wait?
She asked, as she watched him place the metal cup containing the submerged fruit onto the embers.
"I'm not sure. 10, 15 minutes, maybe," he promised. "Just be patient."
Sarah rose from her place by the fire, dusting herself off as she crossed behind him.
"Well, I'm going to go inside and tighten up my bandage while we're waiting."
Sarah emerged 20 minutes later, no longer wearing her jacket. Her shirt underneath was a dirty light brown, permanently stained by yesterday's encounter with the floodwaters. There was a bulge on her left side, where her bandage was hiding, and she was holding it with her hand.
"Meg, can you tie this for me?" she asked, lifting the left side of her shirt.
"Sure," he agreed, rising from his seat to assist her.
He grabbed the two ends of the bandage, cinching it up tight.
"Ouch!"
she squealed, flinching from the pain.
"Sorry."
"No, it's all right," she assured him. "Maria said it's got to be tight, or it won't provide any support."
"You sure?"
"Yes,"
she promised, taking a deep breath and nodding at him to proceed. Mac pulled on the bandages again, causing her to bite down on her lower lip. He quickly tied it off, tucking the tails of the bandage under to pad it and keep it from digging into her side.
"There you go. Good as new," he announced as he stood up.
"Thank you."
Sarah lowered her shirt cautiously, testing the stability of the bandage.
"Yes, that's much better."
"Your hair,"
Mac exclaimed, noticing that it had been combed.
"How did you—"
"I found a comb in your pack, in the little hygiene kit. There was a toothbrush there as well, along with a little tube of toothpaste that you can swallow."
"Yeah, I can smell it. Kind of minty."
"Yes."
Sarah sat back down by the fire.
"You know, you don't realize how much you miss the little things until you have to go without them."
"I suppose you're right."
"You want to try it?" she offered. "It'll make your mouth feel minty fresh."
"Sure, why not?" he agreed.
He reached into the hut and pulled out the pack, digging through it until he found the little black hygiene packet. After a minute of brushing, Mac swallowed.
"Not bad," he agreed,
licking the last of the pasty foam from his teeth and gums.
"It beats having grimy teeth," she added. "Is our dessert ready yet?"
"Almost,"
Mac decided, as he used a stick to push the heated metal cup off the embers. The water was almost gone, some of it boiled away, while the rest was soaked up by the now swollen pieces of fruit.
"Yep, nice and plump," he announced,
as he held up a piece for her inspection.
"Would you look at that?" she commented, in amazement. "I had no idea they could be rehydrated so easily. Where did you learn how to do that?"
"My mom works in the galley, remember?"
"Oh, of course."
"You're supposed to dip them in sugar, so they might be a little tart. But that's not the best part."
"There's more?"
"The alcohol,"
Mac said, a mischievous grin on his face.
"Alcohol?"
"You bet,"
he said, as he pierced a piece of fruit with the end of a stick and handed the stick to Sarah, with the fruit still dangling on the end of it.
"Won't that get us
intoxicated?" "Yup, a little. That's what's so cool about 'em. Fruit that gets you drunk."
"Where did you get them?"
she asked in amazement, as she examined the piece of fruit.
"Old family recipe," Mac replied.
"I don't understand. Where did the alcohol come from?"
"The hunting knife wasn't the only thing great-great-grandpappy Peter brought with him,"
Mac admitted, as he stabbed another piece of fruit.
"Peter used to pilfer a few pieces of fruit each harvest. Then he would skin 'em, cut 'em up, and bottle 'em in alcohol. After about a year, he'd pull 'em out and dehydrate 'em, so they'd keep longer."
"What did he do with the alcohol?" Sarah wondered.
"What the hell do you think he did with it?"
Mac snickered.
"I'm told it gave the alcohol a fruity flavor, though."
"You never tried it?"
Sarah asked.
"The alcohol, I mean."
"Nope. I was gone before I was born. But every year, we'd break some of these babies out on great-great-grandpappy Peter's birthday, just to remember him by."
Sarah moved the fruit closer to her lips.
"Careful, it's hot,"
Mac warned. He blew gently on his fruit for a few seconds before tossing it into his mouth.
"Oh, yeah,"
he cooed as he chewed the warm, alcohol-laced morsel.
"Oh, sweet nectar of the gods.
Sarah giggled.
Your family's weird.
Mimicking Mac's actions, she blew gently across the surface of the fruit for several seconds. After touching it to test its temperature, she plucked it from the end of her stick and placed it in her mouth, biting down softly. Warm, sweet juice squirted into her mouth, mixed with the subtle hint of bitter alcohol.
Oh, I see what you mean. The alcohol is really bitter, she exclaimed as her face puckered.
It gets easier after you've had a few.
Mac picked up the cup and moved over closer to her, setting the cup back down between them.
You want another?
Sure. Why not?
Mac handed her a piece of fruit, taking another one for himself as well. 5 minutes later, Mac was refilling the cup with dried fruit and water to make another batch. Will finished drilling the last hole in the side of his flute, and now the moment of truth was at hand.
Jack?
He called. Jack looked over from his work area on the far side of the fire. He had been working on a small piece of leftover boar hide, trying to fashion a small tote bag, according to the instructions he found in the Survival Encyclopedia.
What's up?
It's finished, Will announced proudly.
Really?
Jack rose quickly from his work to move over to Will's side of the fire.
Well, give it a try.
Will held the flute up, carefully positioning his fingers in the most comfortable fashion. Raising it to his lips, he wet them briefly, wrapping them around the mouthpiece, and blew softly into the flute. The same sound as before emanated from the narrow slit just beyond the mouthpiece. Holding the note steady, Will lifted his finger nearest his mouth, uncovering the hole. The note changed in pitch, dropping, in what Will recognized as a whole musical step. His eyes widened as he lifted his next finger, causing the note to change yet again. This time, the note went down a half step. He repeated the process, the note changing as he lifted each finger.
It works, Will! Ha ha! The damn thing works!
Jack exclaimed, laughing. Will took the flute down from his mouth, a broad smile spreading across his face.
I don't believe it, Jack praised. It really works!
Will tried again, raising and lowering his fingers in no particular order, producing similar notes in random patterns. He varied the strength of his breath, trying to alter the tonality of the notes. He even trilled his tongue and his fingers. His soul was alive with his newfound power to create music. Even if his fingers had not yet learned the ability to create anything remotely resembling a melody. Sarah laughed with abandon.
Oh, weren't you embarrassed?
Hell no, Mac laughed. It wasn't the first time she'd seen my naked butt.
Sarah squealed with laughter, nearly falling over backward as she plopped another piece of the alcohol-laced fruit into her mouth.
I'll tell you one thing, though. It sure as hell was the last time she ever saw it.
Mac chuckled. Sarah laughed even harder, an accidental snort leaping from her mouth.
Oh, my!
She exclaimed, covering her mouth with embarrassment.
Give me another piece of that fruit, she demanded,
her words slurring.
I don't know. I think you've had enough, young lady.
What?
Don't be ridiculous, she mumbled. I'm perfectly right, she insisted,
attempting to sit up straight.
Perfectly right? He teased. The hell you are. You're shitty.
I beg your pardon?
You're D-R-U-N-K drunk, little lady.
I beg your pardon? She giggled.
You heard me.
I beg your pardon?
She giggled again, a bit louder, falling over against him, her face landing against his chest.
You are drunk, he insisted,
as he lifted her face back up.
Say it, don't spray it, Mr. Mac, she teased.
What?
Mac felt something on his head and looked up. Another drop struck his face, then another and another.
Hey, I think it's starting to rain.
Sarah burst out laughing.
What?
He asked in confusion.
Starling to rain?
She teased.
Now who's D-R-N-U-K, Mr. Mac?
The raindrops started falling harder.
I think we better get inside, Sarah.
Wait,
she begged.
"I want another piece of fruit,"
she demanded confidently. The rainfall increased, growing to a downpour in seconds.
"Jesus!"
Mac exclaimed, grabbing Sarah and dragging her to her feet. But Sarah's legs weren't working very well. Mac picked her up and carried her over to the hut a few steps away. Pushing her head through the door flap, he dropped her inside and then returned to the fire, tossing the remaining firewood onto the sizzling flames in the hopes that he might be able to keep it going in spite of the rain. As Mac finished gathering the remaining wood, he heard a rustling in the bushes not 20 meters from their campsite. He froze momentarily, concentrating to hear through the sound of the downpour. He heard it again, only this time it had moved to the left. Mac quickly looked around for his rifle, which he spied leaning against the tree to his right, about 4 meters away. He walked slowly backwards toward the rifle, now behind him, trying to remain facing the direction of the strange sounds. Unaware of what was happening, Sarah came stumbling back out of the hut into the rain.
"Mac, we forgot the fruit thingies. Ooh, it's really starting to rain,"
she giggled, as she stuck out her tongue, trying to catch raindrops. Something moved in the bushes again, catching Sarah's attention, causing her to turn to her left toward the sound.
"Mac, is that you? Are you taking a wee-wee?"
"Sarah,"
Mac hissed from behind her as he picked up his rifle. Sarah took a step toward the bushes as the unknown intruder moved again. She had heard Mac's voice, but hadn't realized that it was from behind her.
"Oh, don't be so shy, Mackie. I've seen pee-pees before."
"Sarah!"
Mac whispered even louder.
"Behind you!"
Sarah turned around, looking like she might lose her balance for a moment as she did so.
"There you are,"
she teased playfully.
"Get back in the hut,"
Mac ordered.
"What?"
she asked. Then the noise came again, causing Sarah to spin back around, away from Mac, to face the noise.
"Sarah!"
He wasn't whispering anymore, as he shouldered his rifle and charged forward. Sarah turned around, her eyes open wide with fear, just in time to see Mac come charging toward her, holding his rifle up high, as if ready to open fire.
"Mac!"
she screamed.
"Get in the fucking hut!"
he ordered, pushing her back inside as he charged by her. Sarah fell backwards, falling into a wet heap inside the hut, screaming as she fell. Mac ran forward, scaring whatever was in the bushes to run off. But Mac wasn't giving up, and instead jumped over the bushes in pursuit, just in time to see a large, humanoid-shaped, furry creature with long, bluish-gray hair running with amazing speed and agility. He tried chasing after it, but within moments, it was too far ahead of him. Not one to be pushed aside so easily, Sarah rushed out of the hut and started looking around for Mac, ready to give him a tongue-lashing for knocking her down.
"Mac!"
she yelled.
"Where are you, you little shit?"
Not 30 meters away, Mac heard Sarah yelling from camp. He rolled his eyes, looked around again to make sure the creature wasn't coming back, and then headed back to camp.
"There you are!"
Sarah barked as Mac came out of the bushes.
"What the hell is going on?"
she demanded.
"Why did you push me down, and
why are you carrying a rifle?" she finally added, noticing his weapon for the first time.
"There was something out there, Sarah," Mac explained. "Something big."
"What?"
She was sure he was making it all up.
"Something big and hairy, with arms and legs."
"What?"
"Humanoid, with arms and legs and everything," he exclaimed.
Sarah was suddenly terrified.
"You think it'll come back?"
"I think I scared it away."
"You sure?"
she asked, looking in his eyes for confirmation.
"Yeah, I'm sure."
"Good, 'cause I'm not sharing any of our fruit with him."
Mac rolled his eyes, then looked up. "The rain's really starting to come down," he said, changing the subject.
"We're getting all wet again."
Mac looked around a brief moment.
"You get back inside. I'll join you in a minute."
"Okie dokie,"
Sarah agreed, with a drunken lilt.
"I better get back inside. I'm getting all wet."
Mac tossed the remaining wood back on the fire, looked around once more, and then followed Sarah inside. He had a feeling it was going to be a long night.